Welcome in to My Guys in the Desert. I'm Danielle Avari here at the VSiN Circa Studio inside the Circa Sportsbook. At the South Point Sportsbook today, we have Jonathan Von Tobel, our senior NBA analyst, in for Matt Eumanns. We also have Wes Reynolds here. Some of you may know Wes Reynolds from VSiN's Long Shot Show, the best golf betting show. You have to watch it. So let's talk about the Masters. Hideki Matsuyama wins. He's the first Japanese winner of the green jacket. But he did not make it easy for us. He bogeyed three of his last four holes, making him the first Masters champion with a final round over par since 2008. I guess it's not how you finish, it's how you start. His odds to win these via BetMGM, pre-tournament 40-1. You can find him at 51 in some spots. After round one, 16-1. After round two, 20-1. And after round three, -120. But a close finish there. Masters rookie Will Zalatoris shot a 70 and finished as runner-up. It was the best performance by a first-timer to the Masters since Jordan Spieth, who was runner-up to Bubba Watson in 2014. And speaking of Spieth, he bogeyed his last hole for a 70 and tied for third with Xander Schauffele, who shot a 72, which included a triple bogey and a double bogey. Wes, what did you think of Sunday's performances?
Well, you knew that he probably at some point wasn't going to make it easy, but I did think he was going to hang on after Saturday night. He was about a -125, give or take a few cents in terms of being able to hold off and go ahead and get that green jacket. And you kind of felt it was a long time coming. My partner here is a big fan as well of Hideki Matsuyama, who got it done. And you just felt a few years ago when he was the number two player in the world in the OWGR, that he was going to be winning tons of these majors and big tournaments. Has not happened, had not won on the tour in about 3.5 years. So the ball striking was good, but also the scrambling. The fact that he was third in strokes gained around the green, he was leading scrambling most of the time and was able to get it home. The talent has always been there. And keep in mind, you know, sometimes when a guy doesn't win for us, we kind of forget about him and throw him aside. He's only 29 years old. And now he goes back to Japan for this summer. Of course, the Olympic Games are going to be held in Tokyo. Were supposed to be held last year. And he goes back to conquering sports hero. Japan is a golf-crazy nation. And really, golf in Asia is growing across the board. So now you kind of have a guy to carry that banner worldwide.
Yeah, JVT, did you have a ticket on Matsuyama?
I did. Yeah, I did. Actually, and Danielle, you know, Wes alluded to it. I love Mats. I think I've bet him in every single major in the last, like, 3 years. So I have been waiting for this moment for a very long time. He is my white whale. I am Ahab. I have been waiting and waiting to see this finally happen. And by the way, for anybody, Danielle, and out there who has not bet on Matsuyama and tracked him throughout a tournament, and I think Wes would agree, this was like a quintessential Mats type of performance where he can look incredible at stretches, but then also, like, at a PGA championship when he's, like, two strokes back, will duff an iron shot that goes, like, 2 yards, and you'll be like, what the hell is happening? So I was very happy from a fan perspective and the fact that, you know, I added a little cash to my app.
Yeah, he was -3,000 at one point, and then all of a sudden those odds just crashed when Xander Schauffele made the eagle, and then of course Xander put it in the drink on 16, which very few do on Sunday.
Now, obviously a lot less people at this as well, and I believe that Hideki mentioned that there was a little bit less pressure because of that. Do you think that maybe that's why he's had trouble winning in the past, and maybe there's just a little bit less pressure with a little less people around?
You know, I think there's something to that, Danielle. I think the fact that he is the face of Japanese golf, and there is so much pressure on him. He has all the media that come over here stateside or wherever he's playing around the world and cover him as a big sports story, like you would think that they would in Japan. And he is really the quintessential face of that country's golf prowess. There's other good Japanese players, but nobody on this level. So that is a major burden to carry. I mean, the American players, there's several great American players, so there's no one face of American golf, but he is the face of Japanese golf, and now he has the green jacket and the career triumph to prove it.
Yeah, what about Will Zalatoris too? Speaking of pressure, as a first timer to the Masters, what did you think of his performance?
This guy's got the goods. If you look at what he has done since 2020, he and John Rahm are tied for the most top 10 finishes worldwide with 16 top 10s. Granted, Zalatoris did a lot of that on the Korn Ferry Tour, which is essentially like the AAA of the golf tours before you get out of the PGA Tour. But this guy is a really good player. He didn't blink, ends up second on debut. That's a very impressive performance.
It's funny you bring up John Rahm because John Rahm top 10 was my only bet that hit. So shout out to John Rahm on that. So we have a lot more coming up. NFL, MLB, NHL, you name it. Stick with us right here on My Guys in the Desert. Welcome into My Guys in the Desert. I'm Danielle Avari at the VSiN Circus Studio. We have no guests today, but we do have a guest host. We have Jonathan Von Tobel in for Matt Youmans today, our senior NBA analyst, and also Wes Reynolds. And JVT, looking sharp today.
Thank you. I appreciate it. That also indicates that I usually don't look sharp on my hits on My Guys in the Desert. So I would hope that at least I will look a little bit better going forward. I did get a phone call saying, yeah, let's go spruce it up. So I appreciate the compliment, Danielle. All right, Wes, so we got a lot to go through. You and I are Hideki Matsuyama stans, yes. I will call it. I will use the millennial term. I love Mats. The guy has been absolutely incredible. My love for Hideki Matsuyama goes back to, I think, the 2016, 2017 U.S. Open. Mm-hmm. I bet him in a matchup. He won, and that's when I was hooked watching his mm-hmm. game. He was absolutely fantastic, and our boy gets the win 10-under for the tournament, and up and down Sunday, 50-1 before the tournament started, as Danielle mentioned, and this boy brings it home with a really solid Saturday. So your initial thoughts here, because from a fan perspective, it's really cool to see a guy of his ilk win this thing, and especially one that we've been tracking, because you kind of noted when we were talking about this earlier, this is kind of something you've been waiting for,
yes.
for the most part, with Hideki Matsuyama. When you watch his game, he's a really good golfer, but he really hasn't put it together for four consecutive rounds.
It seemed like it was a matter of time, but then when the matter of time doesn't happen right away, you're like, okay, is this going to happen? Recall, this guy was number two in the world just a few years ago, on the brink of being the number one player in the world. He's won a lot of the big events, won the Memorial, won the Phoenix Open twice against very good fields, both in playoffs, mind you, against Ricky Fowler 1 year and then Webb Simpson the following year in 2017. 2017 looked like that was going to be his breakout going into 2018 when he won the Phoenix Open. He had won over in China at the WGC event against a good field just a few months prior and then won the Bridgestone Invitational. And I made that comment on Twitter. I was like, Hideki's back at Firestone here when he dominated one of the great fields, shot a 61 in the final round, 9-under par at Firestone to go ahead and take that event by five shots. So you kind of thought, okay, here we go in 2018, 2019. This is going to be the year of the Mats, and it never really happened until now in 2021. I don't know how many more he's going to win going forward. I would assume, you know, he might get one or two more, but we've had a lot of great players that only get one majors.
Yep.
When you look like Fred Couples, has only won one major. Davis Love had only won one major. So you never really know, but time at least is on his side, being that he is just 29 years of age and has 15 worldwide wins. So you got to think that he's not finished here, but this clearly is the benchmark of his career.
Yep, and look, the ride was wild. Saturday was absolutely incredible. The rain delay, the quote from him, you know, what'd you do? Was it 77 minutes or whatever it was? What'd you do? Sat in my car and looked at my phone. Like it was really cool, calm, collected. The way he did it as well in terms of his game, Wes. But, you know, it's funny because, as I mentioned, you know, this was kind of a quintessential Matsuyama performance. There was a couple of moments. Go back to Friday, right? Friday, when he ends his round, the last three holes, he misses an eagle putt. Like, it was a long one, too, by like an inch. Mm-hmm. He doubles, I think, 16. Misses another birdie putt by an inch and then pars out. And you're like, come on, man. Like, you had these opportunities to potentially put the foot on the throat, kind of get back in there. And I think after Friday, he was 3-under and 4 strokes back from the leader, somewhere in that range. And those are the kind of moments that have kind of held Matsuyama back. And you're kind of looking for, okay, what's going to happen? And I would say, is it fair when we watch what happened, and it's not just this weekend, watching his game overall, he is a guy that he needs to have those leads going into the final round. because his game at times can get a little iffy, like when he chooses the wrong club, goes super aggro on 15 trying to go after the pin when in reality you should probably just lay up and play it safe. Like, you're going to see those types of, I think, moments from him.
Yeah, and some guys, as you know, JVT, is that they're better front runners and some guys are better chasers.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's necessarily a great chaser. He proved he can hold a lead. Now, that doesn't mean he's just going to be rock solid and not have any iffy moments like he had yesterday. You mentioned on 15 when he took that four iron trying to go in two and sailed it over the green. You were worried that was going to be Sungjae M-esque on Thursday when M ended up taking a nine and pretty much washed away his tournament in that spot. But credit to Matsuyama. I think a lot of it, too, he didn't have any really close chasers. He had a lot of guys that were looking for their first major, with the exception of Justin Rose, who, of course, won at Marion at the U.S. Open several years ago, but hadn't really been in that stead in a long time. So you had some guys that were kind of fighting it a little bit that weren't close enough. John Rahm goes out and shoots a low round of 66 on Sunday, but he was way too far back, even par his first 3 days. So it kind of helped that you hadn't had Zalatoris in this pressure spot in a while. Jordan Spieth hasn't really contended in a major in a while, and he looks like he is well on the way back. Yep. So that kind of helped. Everything kind of came together for Matsuyama, and was very happy to see that for him. I think he is a deserving champion. I think we've kind of been waiting for him to realize his potential for a long time, and now he's finally doing so.
Some guys are front runners. Some guys, when the pressure is on, kind of tighten up a little bit, right? The sphincter kind of gets in there.
Yes.
Because the pressure gets to you. Xander Schauffele, potentially one of those. I know Matt Youmans, the guy who's usually in this spot, was not very happy with Schauffele. This from ESPN Stats and Info. Xander Schauffele's triple bogey on 16, right when it was a reality that he could catch up with Hideki Matsuyama. Triple bogey on 16, the first of his major championship career, Wes. He had played 1,041 holes in majors, entering number 16. And as you have mentioned, on a hole where golfers rarely find the water.
Yeah, and that's the thing with Xander Schauffele. This guy's got the game to win majors, too, and win multiple majors. But the problem is he makes the mistake at the wrong time. And you've seen that a couple times over the years. And to your point, I believe, on Xander Schauffele, when he went ahead and bogeyed, or triple bogeyed, actually, at 16, over the last 30 years, 1990 to 2020, only seven players out of like 1,600 players, I think, give or take a couple, have played that 16 in the final round and made triple or worse. So nobody usually finds that drink on 16, but he did. But now you look at Xander, tied for third, now has six career top five finishes and just 15 major championship starts. So 40% of the time, he is finishing top five or better. So you know he's got the goods. It's kind of a similar thing with Matsuyama. Just when are you going to put it together? When are you going to avoid the big mistake? When are you going to avoid the big mental error? I don't think you want to give up on this guy. Like I said, I think he is just about 26 or 27 years old, so he has plenty of time. Some guys win right away when they're young. Some guys, it takes a few years, and you got to get that scar tissue in majors, and Xander Schauffele, I think, has plenty of that now.
Yeah, Schauffele was reminiscent of the 2019 Masters. Was it Francesco Molinari who
in race streak
15? Yeah, yep. It was a poor performance, because I don't remember where he was on the leaderboard. He was definitely in contention to catch up with Tiger, and ultimately shoots a two over on that day. So let's do this. Let's spin it forward then, Wes. You know me, I do enjoy golf. So looking ahead, PGA Championship, the next major up. This is the Kiawah Island Golf
Course. Kiawah Island, yes.
And there we go. Rory McIlroy won his first PGA Championship here back in 2012. So tell me if my assessment is wrong here. Looking at the course map and just kind of a cursory view of what we can expect, Link-style type of course along the coast, really wide open, not a lot of trees, bunch of sand and water. You have to deal with wind, too, as a golfer here. Mm-hmm. So your initial thought, Dustin Johnson over at the DraftKings 10-1, Rory McIlroy co-favorite. My initial thought was, European guys with experience on links types courses. One of the dudes that has been outside of, you know, my love for Hideki Matsuyama, I think you know this as well, Tommy Fleetwood, is a name that immediately came to mind when surveying this course. But what we can expect as we look forward to PGA Championship.
Well, and this is designed by Pete Dye.
Yes.
And it's also in South Carolina, obviously more on the coast necessarily than Harbortown is, where they're going to play the RBC Heritage this week. But if you want to look, see guys who have done well on Pete Dye designs, of course, Kiawah several years ago were Rory won. Rory, a very short price because he's obviously won here and is very good on Pete Dye's. But if you watched him at the Masters, he is searching for something right now and has the new swing coach with Pete Cowan. So
you know what's funny is not to, but like,
no, go ahead.
Rory has kind of started to become, not in this tournament because he's a 10-1, but I made the case he's started to approach Ricky Fowler territory, the odds drift, right? Where you're starting to see on these tournaments like the Masters, was he like 17-ish, 19-1, 20? Like he's going to start to get
you're
in that
waiting
range.
To see those 20s on Rory, and then I think maybe there's a buy spot. I even had a ticket on him last week when he got to 19-1, and he just was never really in the mix. But this is a familiar side. He'll also get Wells Fargo a couple weeks before where he's won the Wells Fargo Championship at Quail Hollow in Charlotte. But when you're looking at these Pete Dye courses, kind of the history, you want to look at Whistling Straits, which hosted a PGA several years ago. Also the Ryder Cup venue later this year. TPC Sawgrass for the Players Championship. River Highlands up in Connecticut that hosts the Travelers. There's TPC Louisiana, which hosts the Zurich Classic. Harbortown, Crooked Stick in my neck of the woods in Indiana hosts the BMW Championship some years. The Stadium Course out for the American Express. So plenty of Pete Dye's to look at. So a lot of those same names will appear. Dustin Johnson, Webb Simpson, who won the RBC Heritage last year. Patrick Cantlay, very good on Pete Dye. Siwoo Kim, very good on Pete Dye. So you'll have some guys up and down the odds board, but you really didn't see too much of an adjustment based on these odds we're looking at DraftKings, with the exception of maybe Will Zalatoris.
I was gonna say, I don't think he was 28-1.
No, he was not, but most of these guys pretty much in the same vein, I guess, if you will. Jordan Spieth, I think, obviously has been cut based on how he was bet for the Masters. A very good result for many houses across Las Vegas, and I'm sure across the country, seeing him not be able to cash those tickets, especially at those big numbers in the spring.
And by the way, as Ben Wilson, our producer, points out, you know, again, always shop for your numbers. It's a key point we always discuss. Rory McIlroy, 18-1 over at Westgate to win this thing, PGA Championship. So again, as you look around, and that's what we're kind of talking about here. You know, it was the approach I took for a couple of times with Jordan Spieth. He was Colonial this past summer, where I had taken a shot at Jordan Spieth on a course he'd done well in the range of like 60-1. And those, you know, those prices are gone now, especially with the way he had been playing lately.
Yeah, he's back.
Yeah, he's definitely back. So we're going to see that. And it's actually, just from a fan standpoint, it is cool to see a guy like Jordan Spieth kind of come back to the forefront. He was so dominant. I was going back. You know, I was actually sitting in Ben Wilson's spot right now. We had done the overnight, like early morning watch party. I think it was at Oasis, you know, when he won the British Open that year. And I just remember watching him on that hole. Was it, what hole was it where he goes off course and then, of course, you know, corrects itself, goes out of bounds essentially behind the tractor, whatever it was. He was so good and so dominant. It is pretty dope to see that he's actually back in the fold.
Yeah, and really what happened with him this weekend, he was certainly a contender. Yep. He didn't make the putts. I was looking at the stats. Out of the 54 players that made the weekend this weekend at Augusta for the Masters, he was 51st out of 54 for strokes gained putting. Wow. You rarely see that with Jordan Spieth, because Jordan Spieth's kind of made a career out of living off his short game, because this is a guy that, if you've watched him, does not necessarily hit it well off the tee, does not hit it particularly long, does not hit it particularly straight and find a ton of fairways, but a solid iron player at least, and obviously aces around the green. So that was really strange to see, even though he does finish 7-under, tied for third with Xander Schauffele. So we've kind of seen it trending that Jordan Spieth was on his way back. And then if you timed it right and took him at the Valero, albeit at a short price, he got there last week. So back in the winner's circle for the first time in about 3.5 years. So he is well on his way back to being a top 10, top 15 guy in the world.
Yep. So Matza winner, the Philadelphia Phillies, a winner last night in Major League Baseball. Let's discuss this really quickly. West 7-6, your final score. Phillies were a plus 150 underdog, total 9. Let you guess if it went over the total in a 7-6 game.
Yes.
But controversy, of course, at the end. Second time in less than a week that we have this issue now with Major League Baseball in terms of replay reviews, and us clearly seeing the obvious result, and yet for some reason the proper and correct result not being called and not being upheld, or excuse me, that was upheld, the wrong decision was upheld, but not being put forth. So there's a couple of angles I actually wanted to take here on this. First off, let's hear from Drew Smyly, who was after the game talking about this, said it's clear, foot didn't touch the plate, everybody saw it, and it's kind of embarrassing.
No, I didn't. It's a shame to end a game like that. It's, you know, in real time, it's obviously bang, bang, Lance is right there in position, making the best call he can. But then we have 5 different angles on a national televised game. It's clear that his foot didn't touch the plate, that it was on the chalk. everyone saw it and sees it, you know, everyone knows it. And for MLB not to overturn that, it's embarrassing, you know. Why even have replay if you can won't overturn that? So that's the way I feel about it. I think everybody feels that way.
I completely agree, right? Why even have replay? The other angle in our realm here, Wes, is we got that video, by the way, from Bally Sports. Bally's just inked a multi-year deal with baseball for access to official MLB League team marks, logos, and data. Company's going to incorporate it in its portfolio of sports betting products. Major League Baseball TV, or MLB.TV, Better's Eye, I think, is the sports betting show that they just debuted, right? I think it was a couple weeks ago or whatever it was. You want to get into this space, right? It is, I think, on you to get these results correct. If you're going to dip your toe in these waters, you got to be able to correct things like this.
And now you have more eyeballs and you have more scrutiny than ever before with the gambling content and the sport betting content involved here. So you want to get this right. And look, I always see this when umpires or referees miss a call. It's like robot umps. Well, I don't know if that's necessarily the answer. And look, you're always going to have human error. Referees, umpires are going to make bad calls. But when you have the technology for the replay review, you have to kind of commingle that and combine that together and be able to get this right as soon as possible. It doesn't mean you're going to get it right every single time. But when it becomes an obvious call with all this scrutiny and all this technology involved, you got to be able to at least get as close as you can to getting this right. I don't want to see robot umpires. I mean, I think referees and human error is part of the game and part of sport in general.
Well, and here's the thing, that the problem here is this seems to be ego, right? Because when you go and you look at it and the ruling is upheld, that to me, again, we have no instance because, and this is the other aspect of this, MLB umpires should be forced to relay their decisions as to why, like all of these other officials. That's an ego thing. That's you up there in New York saying, I don't want my guy to look foolish and not get this right. And that's ridiculous because if you're altering results because of that, it's absolutely asinine. But replay again, front and center with Major League Baseball, a very big issue. All right, we have a lot left to get to. Today is the NHL trade deadline. We'll go over some of the bigger names and moves that we have out there. We also want to take a look as, guess what? We're actually just over 2 weeks away from the NFL draft. It's coming quick. And so we're going to look at this. Well, I'm actually a little bit over a month away. 2 weeks, I got excited. But regardless, we're going to go price shopping because we're starting to see more and more stuff up on these boards as we get closer to the NFL draft. A couple of draft position props I want to throw at Wes Reynolds. One stuck out to me. It's a wide receiver. I think he's going to go a little bit deeper in the first round. We'll see what Wes thinks when we return. It's My Guys in the Desert. I'm JVT filling in for Matt Humans here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Into the OddsTrader.com studio at the South Point Casino. Make sure you check out OddsTrader.com and download the free OddsTrader app right now so you can start winning with the up-to-the-second info you need. Now back to My Guys in the Desert with your hosts, Jonathan Von Tobel and Wes Reynolds.
Thanks, Danielle. Always appreciate it. Trying to look as good as Matt Humans does on a daily basis up here at the sets. That's why I did my hair.
That's a tall task, JVT.
Figuratively and literally, right? Yeah, exactly. All right. So today, big day in the NHL. We did hit the trade deadline earlier today. We did have some very big moves. One that I know that you wanted to hit on right out of the gate is the Washington Capitals. Wes Reynolds made a, I guess some are calling a blockbuster deal at the deadline, huh?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe that's a little bit high of a term here to call it a blockbuster. It's based on some potential. Obviously, Anthony Mantha is a big guy. He scored 24 goals in a season twice, matched that pace in just 43 games last season. So he's had five full NHL seasons, but it's kind of what you notice watching NBA on a nightly basis, JBT. Somebody has to score on a bad team. And Anthony Mantha was kind of that for the Detroit Red Wings, who are basically Steve Yzerman is trying to rebuild this whole darn thing to get to the glory years when he played and was wearing that red uniform for the Red Wings. So, look, the Capitals are getting some scoring reinforcement at least, and they did give up Jacob Vrana, Richard Panik, a 21 first-rounder, and a 2022 second-rounder. So, look, if you're the Red Wings, I think that this is a great deal because you're getting two players that you can have in your rotation, and then a first and a second rounder for Anthony Mantha, who, you know, this is not exactly like a star, I would say, when you compare some of the other trades that we'll get to in a moment, what little Boston had to part with for Taylor Hall from Buffalo. And look, Vrana is 24 years old. He kind of fits the timeline better than Mantha, I think. So I think this was a good deal for Detroit. It's a deal they had to make. They're at the bottom of the barrel. Washington gave up a lot, but look, Washington's right in the mix in that Eastern Division, in that very tough Eastern Division with the Islanders and with the Pittsburgh Penguins, who also made a deal at the deadline. So it's kind of like keeping up with the Joneses, I think, this trade necessarily.
Yeah, Caps right now tied at the top of that with the Islanders, 58 points as we sit, 25-1, depending on where you look, the number for the Washington Capitals to win the Stanley Cup. And then we get, you know, the other deals. You mentioned Taylor Hall traded to Boston over the weekend. They also get Curtis Lazar, Anders Bjork, 2021 second in there. Seems like a pretty impactful acquisition for the most part. Bruins, as we know, right, 4 points ahead of New York for that final East Division playoff spot. But it looks like, too, just from a statistical standpoint, you know, I'm a little bit of a stat nerd, and they give you insight into things that maybe you don't follow entirely, but this is a Boston team, only +5 in goal differential, talking about 30th in expected goals for the season, 30th in high danger chances generated by this offense. I would think that Hall, whose play is down a little bit, he would, though, fit into a Boston team that kind of, well, maybe desperately is a little too strong. Does seem like they very much need some offensive pop.
Yeah, they got the better end of the deal because they did not have to really give up very much, and they're going to try to put him on that second line with David Krejci. They've tried a lot of guys over the seasons with Backes and Louis Erickson, Jake DeBrusk. The list goes on and on. Taylor Hall, obviously, his shooting percentages have been poor, and part of that was, you know, that the fact that he's been traded around a lot, and now I think has found a home. So they're hoping for a regression to the mean in terms of the positive standpoint. He can drive the offense on the five-on-five situation. The defense is a little bit below average. If you look at the power play in his last 102 games, 5 goals and 19 assists. So, you know, hopefully maybe Taylor Hall for the Boston Bruins will kind of find the player he was a few years ago. And, you know, this is not a team, as you mentioned, known for offensive fireworks, and the defense has been injured. So they've been having to score a little bit more, and they needed some kind of punch, and maybe Taylor Hall can provide that.
I thought the other one that at least caught my eye, Wes, the Toronto Maple Leafs right now behind the Lightning in terms of Stanley Cup odds over the DraftKings Sportsbook, +650, +575 on Tampa Bay. Not only going out and acquiring Nick Foligno, a first-round pick and a 2022 fourth-round pick. Remember, they also got David Rittich from Calgary. It was a 2022 third-round pick, kind of shoring up the back end of their depth at goaltender, maybe Frederik Andersen, a little bit more unhealthy than we kind of expected. But that's kind of, those are two moves that generally on the surface I kind of like to see, addressing needs, obviously, and it seems like those are going to go a long way toward helping Toronto get to potentially where they could be.
And look, Toronto is in the easier division, that all North Canadian division where they have a 6-point lead over Winnipeg. So look, 59 points, but there's kind of the cynicism of how good are the Toronto Maple Leafs when you've been able to beat up on teams like Ottawa and Vancouver, who are obviously way down. Now you got to compete with the big kids, with the Capitals and with the Lightning and with the Islanders and so on and so forth. So I think two very good deals for Toronto. And Toronto really got Columbus got a bigger return for Nick Foligno than Buffalo did for Taylor Hall in that Boston trade. So good deals for the Leafs.
All right, when we come back, let's go shopping. And not at Men's Warehouse where I got this coat. I want to go shopping around some sports books for some draft propositions and see where we can get some good prices on some of these guys and where they're going to go. It's My Guys of the Desert here on VSiN.
Welcome back in. I'm Danielle Avari. The spring sports betting action is just getting started. Our VSiN experts are covering early season baseball trends, NHL and NBA playoff races. Plus, we're looking at all the key picks and predictions for the NFL draft. We give you all the tools to make the most of every bet, including our 24/7 video coverage, odds and analysis for every game on VSiN.com, our daily members-only best bet emails, and in-depth coverage of every major event in Point Spread Weekly. The weather and the betting action is heating up, and now is the time to sign up for your VSiN 10-day free trial at vsin.com/subscribe. Now back to my guys in the desert with Jonathan Von Tobel and Wes Reynolds.
Thank you, Danielle. I just checked my Twitter account. I always get a little nervous. I checked it right now. This is not a brag, by the way. I had 17 notifications. I was like, oh, boy. I hope I didn't say something stupid. So I didn't. Thank God. Just a lot of likes. Wes Reynolds riding alongside a reunion of the opening line show that we did throughout the football season. And this is where we come back to. Where did it lead you, Wes? Right back to me. And NFL
talk. Of course. Because all roads lead to Von Tobel.
That's right. So NFL draft position props. For those who don't know about me, you know, I love the NBA. I am also quietly a draft nerd. Really enjoy it. You know, I've been lucky enough here at VSiN for the last, I think, 3 years. Now, Humans and I have done the NFL draft betcast, which has always been a lot of fun. So always enjoy this. And as we get closer to the draft, which, by the way, I was stumbling around everywhere. Date is April 29th. So I was right. We're over 2 weeks away from this bad boy. I will say, and let's get this out of the way now, one of my pet peeves about the draft, Wes, is just the trickling of props that are put out there by operators pretty much everywhere. And look, I think there's a real conversation we had is the draft is one of those rare instances where you and I are on equal footing with the operators at this point right now. We get the same information. We get the same mock drafts. Everything is equal. So I think that's why there's some tentative nature behind some of these operators to put a lot of propositions out there because you can get burned on them.
I've talked to a few bookmakers over the last couple of years about this very topic, and they're like, we don't really like the NFL draft. We usually get our butts kicked on this thing or don't really make out very, very much ahead, if it any at all. So, yeah, they're a little bit gun-shy and a little bit lukewarm to, I think, put this out. But now that it's going across the country, it's not just in the little hotel ballroom in New York, that it's going around to different cities within the NFL and different markets. It's becoming more of a wagering day, and plus the fact that it's over, I think, what is it, 3 days now?
Yeah.
It's over 3 days where you have that first round in prime time. So you got to be able to put this inventory out, and some of these books that maybe aren't here in Nevada, non-Nevada jurisdiction books, are putting this out. So you got to compete and offer that type of menu.
So as a lot of these props are here, and I'm here throughout the week, by the way, filling in for Human. So as we kind of go throughout the week, we'll look at a lot of these wrap-up position props. We have total, you know, positions in the first round as well. But I wanted to look at four guys specifically today because the range of prices kind of stuck out to me looking at some of the operators. But I also think they're fascinating case studies. You know, let's start at the top. J.C. Horn, right? J.C. Horn, cornerback, seems like a relatively deep corner draft at this point right now, especially near the top, coming out of South Carolina. Joe Horn's son, right? Mm-hmm. Didn't realize that until I was looking up some more stuff on him. So a position of 13.5, and this is kind of where I start the handicap, is where does that put you, right? We're talking about number 11, New York Giants, Philadelphia Eagles at 12, Chargers at 13, Minnesota Vikings at 14. So you kind of ask yourself the question, is there any team West inside the top 13 that needs a corner that you could bet this over? And you see the ranging prices, right? It's a pick at DraftKings, to pick at BetRivers. FanDuel doesn't have Horn on the board. But if you look at a shop like William Hill, you kind of see the discrepancy where the under, little shaded there at minus 120. So if I look around here, West, and I see teams like Detroit, Carolina, Denver, Dallas, New York, Philadelphia, Los Angeles, I can think those are all teams that could potentially need a corner. How do you whittle that down from there? A team like Detroit, for example, just spent a top pick on a corner last year. Are they going to do it again? Probably not. Carolina Panthers, they spent all of their picks on defensive players last year. Are they going to do it? Probably not. And then you get to the other teams, and now you have to ask yourself, not only are there just three spots, really, that I have to get this guy in, four potentially if you're talking about Denver and Dallas, but then you're talking about, is he better than Patrick Surtain? And that's the other thing that you have to discuss.
Right. And the obvious candidate kind of in that bottom of the top 10, early 11 to 15 range, the first candidate that jumped out at me were the Dallas Cowboys, who absolutely need help everywhere on defense. And you were thinking, okay, maybe Pat Surtain. It seems like he is the logical candidate. I think he was the co-favorite with Micah Parsons, the linebacker out of Penn State, to be the first defensive player taken. I think they were both at about plus $1.50.
And they have that weird Trayvon Diggs connection,
yes,
right?
Yes. And then the cornerback, though, the odds to be drafted, I think he was minus 300 favorite, was Pat Surtain. Now down to 250. So Horn is starting to get the buzz because you look, and I mean, anything can happen depending on the trades, but Arizona could be looking for a corner, and that would be 16. So that would obviously be the over. So it's kind of evaluating, okay, do they like Horn better? Do they like Pat Surtain better? From this standpoint, of course, as the bloodlines, Pat Surtain II, his father was a pretty good corner in his own right back in the 2000s. So want to see where these guys decide to go, and then who's going to be able to trade out for the draft, and who's going to be wanting to trade up for these quarterbacks, assuming one of these quarterbacks drop. They're going to go, at least, you know, top three. We don't know necessarily yet if Atlanta is going to go ahead and draft one. They've said they're willing to trade out, but we know with the NFL draft, as both NFL draft nerds, GMs and agents will lie to us, JVT, and put out information out there that is not accurate. So do not take all of these with, or take all this info with a grain of salt, I guess.
I will say this 1,000 times. I brought it up to Michael Lombardi when I filled in a Lombardi line last week. Remember, last year in the draft, Justin Herbert was a Dolphin. A week before, Justin Herbert was a Dolphin. He was going to be there. The Dolphins loved him, allegedly. They had him ahead of, you know, Tua Tagovailoa the entire time. And then what ends up happening?
Right.
Tua is a selection for the Miami Dolphins. So this far out, you know, you see these stories. It's not really a lot to put, you know, a lot of water in at this point right now. So you have the corner situation with Horn, who I tend to lean a little over there. The one I really like, Jaylen Waddle, wide receiver out of Alabama. So I think one of the things we can kind of knock off here in the process, there's going to be, I think, at least two pass catchers going before Waddle. I said pass catchers, right?
Kyle Pitts
and Kyle Pitts. For sure going to go before him, I would think. Kyle Pitts seems to have Atlanta written all over him. We'll see from there. And then you ask yourself, okay, DeVonta Smith could probably go ahead of him. So if you're taking under 11.5, Wes, you're actually asking there to be 3 to 4 pass catchers going in the top 11 selections. And you're talking about only 4 teams really having needs: Cincinnati, Miami, Detroit. And those are needs at wide receiver. Mm-hmm. Pitts is probably going to go to Atlanta there. Like, that's what, when I talk about that, the sample size and what you're looking at, teams that need it, unless somebody's trading up to within the top 11, Waddle over was the selection that I had as circled in terms of playing, because I just don't find a space for him to go within the top 11.
Because you might see teams trading up and guys trading down thinking they could get a Jaylen Waddle, like maybe the New York Giants could perhaps think that they could get him at a certain point in the early in the top 10. So maybe they pass. Obviously, Philadelphia candidate too. But I would lean toward the over here. I think receivers get a little overpriced in this.
And by the way, this is why we put up our shop numbers. Shaded to the over at every single operator that we put up there, DraftKings, FanDuel, BetRivers, except for one, and that's William Hill, and that's why you shop right and get even money on the over, despite the 3 other shops having that. All right, we'll be back here on My Guys in the Desert.
Welcome back into the OddsTrader.com studio at the South Point Casino. Make sure you check out OddsTrader.com and download the free OddsTrader app right now so you can start winning with the up-to-the-second info you need. Now back to My Guys in the Desert with Jonathan Von Tobel and Wes Reynolds.
Thank you very much, Danielle. Jimmy Vaccaro just stopped in. He'll be in the show tomorrow. Came by to give us a little guff, say what's up. Jimmy's a man.
He was so happy to see you, JBT.
Me and Jim go way back to my days as a producer for Matt Eumanns on the Las Vegas Sportsline, a show that you know very well.
He would give away some giveaways to Don Vito's and the fine dining establishments here in this very property.
All those things that Jimmy gives away, and yet the only thing I've gotten is a free breakfast sandwich from the deli. Now, I love the deli, but I mean, Paul Howard gets like steaks and all sorts of things. I guess I just got to ask. The infamous Jimmy Stamp. Got to get my hands on it.
Yes.
All right. We got Major League Baseball. By the way, morning game or early game for those of you on the East Coast. Somebody made fun of me because I called a 12 o'clock tip off or a 10 o'clock tip off in basketball, a morning game. Like it's 1 p.m. over here, bro. So the early game has been postponed, Red Sox and Twins. But we do have a full slate that as of this point right now is still on the schedule. So we could take a look. We'll start in the National League, work our way around. My first question to you, Wes. So the way that over the last few years I have handled Major League Baseball, especially as a guy who helps VSiN a lot with the NBA coverage, has been dipping toes in the water, right? Mm-hmm. More watch and observe, and especially, too, and you and I both are kind of in the same camp where I like these numbers a lot, right? The stats, everything. But you kind of need a couple of games
right.
to let these numbers really even out to see what some of these players are. So personally, I am a little tentative diving in early into Major League Baseball because I want larger sample sizes mm-hmm. for a lot of these guys to then base my handicapping on.
Yeah, you like to get these teams at least two or three times through the full rotation, get two to three starts under their belt before you can start looking at the numbers because, look, some guys usually are very good starters and some guys are usually very good as you get later on in the year and need a few starts under their belt, but... And a lot of that is predicated upon weather and whatnot. So, yeah, I like to do that compare contrast as well as you do with the ERA and the xFIP and then taking in the batting average, balls in play, stats. I think those numbers are important. I think if you're just looking at ERA and win-loss, you're not doing yourself a service at all.
So we look at, like, the first game up that we can discuss here, right? San Diego taking on Pittsburgh. Opening number here, San Diego minus 235 on the road. Looking at about minus 220 here, plus 190 coming back on Pittsburgh. You have a good matchup? No, Trevor Cahill versus Yu Darvish.
Got a few lousy matchups today, actually.
We really do. But I think that Yu Darvish is a really good example, right, of what we're talking about. You know, first game against Arizona, toasted. 4 2/3, 4 earned runs, gets taken deep twice, you know, strikes out 6. You'd think, Darvish might not have it after a couple of good years that we saw in Chicago. But then bounces back again against a lesser lineup, but bounces back against San Francisco, pitches 6 strong, 3 hits, just 1 earned run courtesy of a solo shot. So in this matchup here, what you expect from a Yu Darvish against the Pirates is something where are you comfortable laying minus 220? To me, the angle here was, and the market has moved in this direction, the Padres through 10 games right now are 8-2 to the under. Mm-hmm. This offense has not been as explosive as we have seen. The Arizona game, there was a little bit more pop. Tatis and the injury hasn't really helped, but they go through kind of a slugfest with the San Francisco Giants in that game or in that series. This has been a team, and not even just unders, West. Like, they've been really a low scoring. We're talking about like 3-1 finals, mm-hmm. right? 3-2 finals. These have been some really low scoring games for the Padres, and the market has reacted in such. Opening total I saw was 8.5 shaded to the under at minus 120. We're looking at 7.5 right now, shaded to the over minus 115.
And the Pirates did have, I believe, 19 runs total in their first 7 games. Yep. Now they touched the Cubs up for 8 on Saturday and then 7 yesterday. So I don't all of a sudden think, okay, this Buccos offense is really finding something. I think those are just results or kind of aberrations. So to your point, that's why you've seen that total move downwards. And like you said with Darvish, I think even in a new environment, even though San Diego, Petco considered more of a pitcher's park on the road tonight, but sometimes you get in that new uniform, it's going to take you a couple starts, and I think that's the case with Darvish going forward.
Yeah, and the interesting angle, too, with the total as well is the fact that Trevor Cahill was roasted
yes.
the last time out. What, 7 earned runs, 2 homers. It was a 14-1 loss for that team against the Cincinnati Reds. So what that means, too, if this is going to be another poor performance for Cahill, you know, another full run toward the under here between these two guys of this is going to be see if we'll see if this trend continues for the San Diego Padres later tonight. Chase Anderson takes the mound for the Philadelphia Phillies. We got the New York Mets sending out David Peterson at this point right now. Or no, that one's been postponed.
Yeah,
correct?
We can yep. skip ahead. Yep. I was going to say so. Rain delay. So
there it is. All right, so let's go to Miami, Atlanta then. Braves opening up as $1.50. You have the other price again. This is the opening number plus 130. We're down to about $1.34, $1.35 on Atlanta. Sandy Alcantara takes the hill here for the Miami Marlins. Alcantara off to a pretty solid start, and this is another one where you see a team with a really solid pitcher at the front end here, Wes, and a lineup that doesn't have a lot of pop. And now you see 8.5 shaded to the under at minus 120.
Yeah, and the Marlins, I think, have kind of had a little bit of tough luck this year. They've already blown a couple saves. So I don't know. I don't think they're great, but I don't think they're necessarily as bad as their record here. So they're taking on Atlanta, who Atlanta got to go home and played pretty well, except lost Sunday Night Baseball, so they didn't get the sweep. But you kind of felt that the Braves were going to turn it around once their bats got going at home. But Marlins taking the money here. I think maybe off that Sunday Night Baseball, we heard the soundbite from Drew Smyly earlier. Perhaps, obviously, some angry Atlanta Braves that thought that they got the short end of the stick and probably did on that call. So you're seeing the money move to Miami. I think it's probably too late if you want to get on the Marlins. You've lost so much value here on the side.
Yeah, and, you know, a Marlins team, too, I can understand it because, while your lineup isn't great, a pitcher at the level of a Sandy Alcantara is going to mm-hmm. keep you in a couple of games mm-hmm. More often than not. And you've also seen a little bit on the run line go up there, the plus 1.5 up to minus 165 now on the Miami Marlins. All right, Chicago Cubs, Milwaukee Brewers. I got Adbert Alzolay versus Freddie Peralta here. The opening price had Milwaukee in the range of $1.50. We're down to about $1.35, $1.30, and $1.35 pretty much everywhere we're looking right now. Total, 8.5 right now, shaded to the over, and that's where we opened up. Actually, now it's flipped, shaded to the under at -120. Any read here between these two?
Yeah, I had a little bit of decent success with the Brewers. Yep. Faded the Cardinals in a couple starts. Brewers absolutely got the whooping sticks out with 9 runs in both games. And what we've seen with the Cubs so far, this offense very much struggling, and they struggled in Pittsburgh. So I certainly don't disagree necessarily with fading the Cubs. Freddie Peralta, doesn't it seem like he's been in the league for about 10 or 15 years, and he's only like 24 years old? So Peralta, look, I think he has been – he's got an affinity for the swings and misses. He's one of the best in terms of strikeout rate in all of MLB. So you've got a Cubs team that's eighth in swinging strike rate because they swing in a lot of bad pitches. So they lack anything really on the left side. They just have Ian Happ, and you've got a pretty weak matchup against a very solid right-hander in Peralta. So Brewers would be where I go here. I actually think 130 is kind of cheap.
Yeah, and by the way, to your point, kind of speaks to what the Cubs are. You know, bad swings, swinging for the fences for the most part, and you get this boom or bust offense where you're going to get, and this has been like 2 years now, where you're going to get either a, you could potentially get like a 1-0 type game, or you can get an explosion of like seven runs, eight runs in a contest for the Cubs. At least for me over the last few years, it made them relatively hard to kind of get a finger on. All right, we go over next couple of games as we run through the National League slate here on My Guys in the Desert. The Washington Nationals taking on the St. Louis Cardinals. UNLV's own Eric Fetty on the mound here for the Washington Nationals. Last appearance, not great. 1 2/3, 5 earned runs, 3 walks as well. Command wasn't there for Fetty, and he got toasted for it. And then you get Gant on the other side, who put up a really good performance in the appearance against Miami. 4 innings, 4 hits, struck out 4, did walk 3. So that's kind of worrisome when you're giving up some command. Nationals, of course, too, still dealing with what they have been dealing with in terms of the COVID issues.
Yeah, and really, I think Fetty probably regresses to the positive here where he will pitch better, but he's going to need some help at the plate. They did not get against the Dodgers over the weekend, just 5 runs in a 3-game set at Chavez Ravine. So worried a little bit about that Nats offense. And of course, you mentioned the COVID issues. Fetty, we know, is a pitched contact guy, doesn't really strike out a lot of guys. I think last year it was 12.6% of batters that he had struck out in 2020. So not a guy. It's a guy that's going to try to get some ground balls and even some fly ball outs. John Gant's been pretty reliable to start the season. And the Cardinals got embarrassed at home by the Brewers, gave up a lot of runs. I think maybe this is kind of a settle the ship type of start here for John Gant. You've got a Nats team that's really not hitting very well. I think you look at the Cardinals on the right side, Arenado and those guys should be able to touch up Eric Fetty at least enough here, even though I think Fetty's going to be better. But I do like the Cardinals here. It's gone up a little bit, 145. I still think it's playable.
How dangerous and how bad is this going to get for Madison Bumgarner? Is this an issue that is going to be a problem all year? Or are we just talking about 2 bad starts sort of season? 11 earned runs through 9 innings pitched for Mad Bum up to this point. Swinging strikes, he's got 10 strikeouts, but the walks are up as well. 5 walks, got taken deep twice in his debut against the San Diego Padres for his first appearance, put it that way. Now we're talking about Arizona, small underdog at home against an Oakland team who has started to turn the ship over. -130 right now. +110 on the other side, 9.5, and it's a pick most spots.
Chris Bassitt hasn't been great in his own right for Oakland here in the first couple starts with the next FIP over 5, also an ERA over 5. But Mad Bum has absolutely been worse, and maybe you don't want to read too much into it, but maybe it's kind of the time. Father Time catches up with you at random spots and in random situations, and I think it's probably caught up with Mad Bum here at this standpoint. Oakland, I think, at least got some confidence winning a couple games in Houston.
Because and not giving up 9 runs right in the game.
Yes, that absolutely helps. So I'm probably going to stay out of this one, but I would lead with the A's. I don't know if I really want to lay them on the road. Diamondbacks getting the money here, though, off the opener.
Yeah, we see at least at one spot for those in the jurisdiction that have like FanDuel. We're talking about as high as $1.35 right now. I'm looking at my screen right now on the Oakland Athletics on the road here against the Arizona Diamondbacks. It's a pretty steep price for a team that does still have some pitching issues, especially in the bullpen as well for the Oakland Athletics at this point. All right, we'll get more to the American League too. And by the way, really quickly, I don't know where you're at. I was talking about this earlier. This season, West, exclusively first five. Can't do it. It's going to be first five. Handicap the starting pitchers and get out from me.
Yeah, I think that's certainly the way to go. The bullpens have not really shown their stuff here early on in April for Major League Baseball.
All right, second hour of My Guys in the Desert on the other side. We're going to have a discussion about the NBA. There is a team that has been treading water, but they should be treading water, and they've been performing very well. We've got a really full slate of NBA action. We'll get back to, by the way, not only to the NFL draft and two players that we have to discuss in terms of their draft position, but also a first look at some of the win totals that are now up for the National Football League. AFC West win totals will be up on deck in the second hour here on My Guys in the Desert.